Hello, I'm with Cassie McGuire. Hi, Cassie.
Hi, Serge.
So we're going to talk about felt sensing. What is felt sensing for you?
All right, and I want to use a felt sensing process as I speak. So if I stop and pause, you and the listening audience will know that that's what I'm doing, that I'm stopping to pay attention to the fresh bodily experiencing right here in the moment.
Great.
So I'm going to do that just for a moment before I answer the question. So I'm asking myself, what is the felt sense or felt sensing to me? So I'm going to pause for a moment. So what comes for me is a difference between what I would call felt sensing as a moment-to-moment everyday activity and
mm-hmm.
then getting a felt sense for the more prolonged process called focusing. So all day, every day. Go ahead.
You're making a difference between felt sensing, that's something that can go on all day long, versus felt sensing as part of the process of focusing.
Yes. And in that all-day-long felt sensing, my experience is that I do have an inner guide, which I'll call kinesthetic. It's not like a tension in a bone or a muscle, but it's like an inner registry of how I'm doing, and it seems to have like a track to it, that it helps me. It's like a rudder that helps me stay on the track of my life. So that goes on pretty much all day. So at any moment I can say, well, how would this fit with my felt sensing of who I am? I don't really ask exactly like that, but I check constantly with decisions I make or what I'm going to eat or whether I'm going to make a certain phone call. I just check with that ongoing felt sensing, I would call it. So that's like an all day long process.
Yeah. Yeah, so that all-day-long process, a kinesthetic inner sense of what feels right.
Great. It feels so good to be reflected. And I'll say that about my focusing process in general as well, that I am maybe more interpersonal than some others, that I greatly prefer to do that longer process, focusing in the company of a listener. It helps me so much to hear my words back from another person. So focusing alone is not something I'm so drawn to except by necessity if I don't have a listener. So I'm going to just take a breath, and then I'm going to describe felt sensing during focusing. So let me just sense in a moment here. I'm noticing some anxiety as I'm speaking. And so as I stop now, I'm going to just breathe into that anxiety and be with it in a friendly way. And that is an example of this kinesthetic way of being, that I'll be just going in my life and then I'll notice an anxiety or and then I know I need to check in. And this happens to me pretty constantly, having these kind of emotional responses come up. So in terms of focusing, so I do this felt sensing against my inner kinesthetic rudder, let's call it, all the time, let's say. But focusing I am most likely to do when something gets stuck. There's a strong emotional reaction that is more like a stuck emotion, like an anger that's, I find I'm rumming, arguing with somebody in my head, or really most often for me lately, it's a kind of an overwhelming anxiety, and I say, oh, maybe it's this, maybe it's that, maybe it's this, maybe it's that, but nothing can make it stop being so anxious.
Yeah.
Or sometimes there's a sadness. So although one can use focusing also like on an intellectual question, like writing a theory, what I rely on it for in a life-saving way is when I'm kind of overwhelmed with an emotional response to a situation. And I think that may be part of my kinesthetic way of being also, that I am very sensitive to situations. When Jenlin and his theory talks about being embodied, or that we are interaction first, or that we're embedded in our situations, that's really true for me in a physical way, that I can walk into a room and I just pick up the vibes of the situation. So
yeah.
Focusing is life-saving for me, and it gives me a way to figure that out.
So the vibes of a situation can be overwhelming, and focusing is what really helps you deal with overwhelming emotion.
Exactly. And there's a big sigh of relief there, like it's really life-saving to have something to use in those situations. Like I have been in a situation which creates a lot of anxiety. It would create anxiety for anyone. It's a life situation that creates anxiety. And I have managed to get through it or live it through for about 2 years without medication for anxiety. Most people in our culture turn to medication or something like that, and I just turn to focusing. And I can get through the sleepless night. I'll just get up and I do my focusing with an online focusing group. So I go to my computer, and I know my people are out there in cyberspace. Even if I may not get a listening response back for hours, I know they're there. And just that knowing they're holding that interpersonal listening space
can very quickly
let me get out of hours of anxiety and into the crux of what's going on for me. So it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, so even before the actual focusing or the actual felt sensing, that sense of connecting, or that you are going to be connecting, or you have initiated a contact with that group, helps hold the anxiety or the difficult feeling into something larger.
Exactly. It is. It creates that an interpersonal context. And immediately, that often helps me get in touch. I may have been laying in my bed trying to do focusing alone for hours before I say, all right, I'm going to get up, sit down at that computer. And then within minutes, usually for me, it goes from anxiety into some kind of a leading into some kind of a teariness, and that may be different in how I do focusing from some other people too, that I really do find that my tears or my teariness is a very reliable guide to follow, to take me to the crux of things. If I notice that certain words bring up a teariness, I'm likely to stop right then and do focusing on that. Like, okay, what's the teariness? And that's often opens into whatever the deeper crux of things.
Yeah.
So I'm noticing some anxiety again, and I'm getting a little breathless talking, so I'm going to stop and sense into, just be friendly with that anxiety, and which I imagine has something to do with the importance that I have given to tears and some disagreement I've had with Jenlin and others about the centrality of tears for me as a guide to deeper felt sensing versus Jenlin more seeing tears as fine but more as a side byproduct. I don't want to get into that argument, but I do want to say, being the kind of person that I am, this, and as a therapist for many years, that noticing just the slightest beginning of tears coming, I almost always ask myself or ask the person, could you just stop and sense into that place of tears?
Yeah.
See what that's about.
Yeah. So there's something about, you know, that experience you have right now about something about tears and the fact of throughout your life as an individual and as a therapist, noticing tears has been something that has been very, very helpful.
It is wonderful to be reflected and reflected so sensitively. My whole kinesthetic being just soaks up reflection when I'm on target. It just is such a relief to be heard. So I'm just going to breathe here and see what comes next. I guess I'll just say this to maybe finish the issue of the place of tears in focusing, that I have also differed with Jen Lynn and others about this, that for me, being the kind of person that I am, and I just recognize differences in the kind of people we are doing focusing, that I can be having a very deep, kind of a sobbing, energy shifting experience, and I can be focusing on the larger felt sense in the midst of that. Whereas Jen Lynn, at least in the early days when I worked with him and saw him doing focusing in groups, would have a tendency to suggest that people pull back from that kind of deep cathartic unfolding, I call it.
Yeah.
As if that was a distraction or they were going too deeply. For me, I'd say, too deeply? What could that be? So that's a good way to describe the difference.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
For me, and yes, there's the whole issue of when someone is being re-stimulated and reliving a traumatic experience in a way that is not unfolding, and yes, especially as a therapist, you have to learn all the great things that Ann Weiser-Cornell and Doralee Grindler-Katona, all the wonderful work that's been done on getting some distance, having images for stepping back, not going into the whole lake, standing on the shore and putting your toe in, that is all also valid, so I'm not... there are two things. One is when someone is overwhelmed, but the other is an understanding that some people can be processing very deeply and still have an observing ego, a part of them that's still asking, well, what is this all about?
Yeah. And so what I'm hearing is that, you know, focusing is a very personal experience. And it's not about some kind of theory or some kind of mold that would go for everybody, but in a situation where you're not flooded with traumatic emotion, you find it very useful to connect with the emotion.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like it is an unfolding, like theoretically in focusing we believe in the felt shift, that something that was stuck or frozen is now open and flowing forward to the next new thing. And I feel that that deep sobbing energetic process is, I call it a cathartic unfolding. I feel like it is my body's way of a log jam opening and energy flowing to a new place. So I would not want it interrupted or to have someone pull me back from that. It's like, no, that is the felt shift.
Yeah.
It's happening.
Yeah, so it's really an experience, that unfolding, that cathartic unfolding, that, you know, the emotion unfolding is the felt shift.
Yes, and it's not just sheer emotion. In fact, I'm not sure I would call it an emotion. I call it an energy. The experience is of energy, which has tears with it or sometimes anger. It has emotional components.
Mm-hmm.
But the most central thing is I feel like energy that was blocked is now flowing forward. And at the end of that kind of cathartic unfolding, I do have and observe in clients what Jen Lin and his theory of personality change, which is one of my favorite of his articles, describes as a final step in focusing called global application,
mm-hmm.
where after a felt shift, you suddenly just have all these experiential insights like, oh, that connects to this in my life, or, oh, now I understand that interaction I had the other day, or, you know, all the pieces
mm-hmm.
of the puzzle have come together in a new way. So
yeah.
that's more evidence to me that that is that cathartic unfolding is a change process.
Yeah, yeah. So that moment where after the felt shift things come together, then it tells you that actually the cathartic unfolding is a felt shift because that's what happens.
Yes.
Things fall into place.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I feel like I'm going to end at that part of the discussion, and I'm going to just go inside and be quiet. But it would also be a time for you to check inside and see if there's any particular aspect of the felt sense process that you want to ask me about. So maybe we can both be quiet for a moment. And
Even before you know mm-hmm. that, what I wanted to share with you is I really appreciate the way you're sharing the process in detail this way. It feels really great to be witnessing that unfolding of the process as you do
uh-huh.
it.
Oh, good. And I'd have to say, if I couldn't say, oh, right now I'm feeling anxious, it mm-hmm. would be a very unpleasant experience for me.
Yeah.
Swallow all that down. And when I do presentations, even to large groups, I just have to do focusing during it and acknowledge what's going on, or with clients in therapy as well. It's just,
mm-hmm.
it's survival for my own body. So.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to stop and be quiet and see mm-hmm. what comes next, but you can do the same if there's some mm-hmm. particular question you have. So I'm going to stop, and I'll be breathing in. I have my eyes closed, and I'm paying attention to the feel of the whole thing, the felt sense in the center of my body, the sense of this whole interview and what might come next. It always makes me sigh just to give myself that focusing space.
Mm, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And as I'm paying attention, a number of different issues float by, and I take each one and kind of check it against my core self-sensing and say, well, do I want to talk about that? And so that I'm just noticing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, comes up an issue I have about focusing, which is not exactly the same as what is a felt sense, but I'll try this out with you.
Mm-hmm.
I have an issue about focusing terms in general in the focusing community. For instance, in the focusing partnership program, or it seems to me that the general length of a focusing turn is often thought to be, let's say, maybe 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my experience, having done this for 30 years as a therapist as well as an individual and a peer counseling teacher, that if our focusing turns are thought to generally be 20 minutes, that I don't think we're doing this whole second step of going deeper into issues. I think maybe we're doing more clearing of a space in a way that lets us feel better, maybe. I find my general focusing turns, and I do exchange a focusing turn by phone every week, is like 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that it takes that much time. There's a lot of telling the story initially, or clearing a space in the more formal way of naming all the various issues that I'm carrying, and then choosing the one I want to spend inner time with. I just think it takes about 40 minutes mm-hmm. for that deeper unfolding to happen. So I just want to say that out loud, that if you are thinking that a 20 minutes is what focusing is and does, it may be truncated in some way, and to consider, and maybe people do this and I just don't know it, but when I do my phone exchange, we each get 40 minutes with a little bit of time to debrief in between.
So it's really important to allow enough time for the process to go deeper.
So I'll be quiet again, see what comes. And I welcome you also if you have any aspect to explore. I guess I'll say a little bit more about the interactive nature of focusing, at least for me. I have done focusing turns by phone most recently, where the focuser really says, oh, I don't need any interaction from you. Just having you there as a listener is all I want. Don't say anything. And then they go into a process which I suppose, if it seemed to me that it was deep focusing with shifting happening, maybe I could just sit there and be quiet. But my experience is that they're kind of going off on a kind of a sensation trip from one sensation in their body to the next, like, oh, now it's in my neck, a tension in my neck, and oh, now I feel it in my toe, and oh, now it's moved up to my head, and that they could go on doing that forever. So if I'm going to work with that person more regularly, I just have to intervene and say, you know, that may be valuable for you, but I wouldn't choose to be in a listening relationship with you long term because I feel like there needs to be some more interaction, some focusing guiding from me or focusing instruction, and I would share that my concern is that you're going from sensation to sensation and that you might need some help to stop and sense into, this would be a good point about felt sensing, sense into the broader felt sense under those sensations. So that has been difficult in the focusing community because there can be such a norm about letting the focuser do exactly what they want and not intervening, and who are you to know better than the focuser what they need. But I'll just say there are two sides to that issue, and when I do focusing and listening with people, I have to ask permission to be more interactive. In part because I believe their focusing process could use some help, and also as a listener, I guess I want to feel like I am there.
So that strikes me, the way we're phrasing what you say to the partner. You say, if I am going to do regular changes with you, this is what I need. And so it really is a part of saying, you know, in a way, coming back to the felt sensing as a rudder, as an ongoing guidance you have. It's not acceptable for me to be in this situation. And hearing you respectfully make room for you in the focus relationship.
Great way of saying that back. Yes, and you make the good point that as a listener or as a therapist, we are felt sensing. Not just the focuser, but the listener is always felt sensing and can use material from that felt sensing, which is part of the whole between the two people, to make suggestions as long as it's done in a respectful way. And you're also pointing out that I did not say that the focuser's way of doing it was wrong, that I just made space for my own need, that I did it in an owning way. So that was a good point that you brought out there.
Yeah. So very clear there that for you, the moment focus is really, the active focus is grounded in the relationship in that sense of, support comes from an interaction with another human being. And it's really important to you. And you're clearly communicating that to people who would be partnering with you so that your needs are met. And it's a satisfying connection.
Yes. And the other side of that is that as a focuser, I ask for what I need as well. That I might say, I really just need to sit and be quiet here. Don't do anything. I'll let you know if I need help. Or I might say, could you say those words back to me or to say any part of that back to me so that the focuser also takes responsibility for asking for what they need.
Yeah. So as describe the active focusing, you're also describing a really relational structure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how to make room for two people to do something together in a way that's fine for you.
Yes. And when it's working, it is the most, it's a wonderful spiritual high, the togetherness, which often again happens for me when the focuser touches on some tears. And I, as a listener, have some maybe even empathic teariness there, that it does feel like the boundaries between us dissolve and we have what Martin Buber would call an I-thou moment.
Mm-hmm.
It just really feels just together in a wonderful way.
Yeah, the boundaries, the possibility of that I-thou moments.
Mm-hmm. So now I noticed I wanted to say a little bit more about felt sensing versus sensations or emotions or images. So just saying this to the listening audience, that there really is a major difference between, for instance, guided imagery, especially during the whole inner child movement, John Bradshaw and that work, there was a lot of guided imagery. You're a child, you find your perfect mother, she takes your hand, you walk into the park, you play in the sandbox, and it would just go on in that kind of a dreamscape imagery. Whereas as focusing people, we would stop at some point and say, okay, now what's the broader feel under that whole image? And that's really what a felt sense is. It's the broader feel of images or dream symbols, the broader feel under an interpersonal interaction, the broader feel under an emotion. I could be having anger, but that's not the same as asking myself, okay, what's all this anger about? And then stopping and sitting quietly. And I've now moved into the room with the phone that's making sound, so hopefully it will stop. Let me go move it. Hold on.
Yeah.
All right, back to that important point. So anger. What's that anger all about? And then that's the sitting quietly with the felt sense of that whole thing.
Yeah. So we're not talking about an image. We're not talking even about an emotion. We're talking about what happens during that moment where you stop, you take a moment to ask yourself what it is, if you feel of this, what is it about, and to let some come up about that.
Mm-hmm. And the felt sense that comes up is, again, I would call it, for me, maybe different for other people, it is kinesthetic. It's like a gathering of energy in the center of my body, around my chest, throat, diaphragm area. It is not discreetly a sensation, bones or muscle or attention. I like to use terms like it's like a Geiger counter. that can draw metal to it. It gathers meaning, and what Jenlin calls felt meaning. It's felt meaning. So it's pre-verbal, it's vague, and you don't know what it means. That's why you do focusing. Now you have this felt meaning, which is very real. It has substance to it. But you don't know what it is. You use focusing, going back and forth between words or images and that felt sense until something nudges it or fits or touches it.
Right. So just to slow down a little bit, you were talking about what happens during that moment when you stop and ask yourself something happened. And this experience of the felt sense for you is different from sensation. And something that happened inside is a felt meaning, but not in the ordinary sense of meaning, because in a way you don't know the meaning in that ordinary way.
Mm-hmm. And as we describe it, I just think of the glory of it and what living without felt sensing is missing. And how Jenlin describes so beautifully, again, in that Theory of Personality Change article, that it is from felt meaning, it is from the felt sense, that totally new things can come. It's at a level of experiencing that many people don't tap into or need help tapping into so that they can change, that it's very difficult to change without touching, felt, experiencing. Mm-hmm. Or I guess we could say theoretically any change is touching, felt, experiencing, whether you're doing it through focusing or some other way. But it's a whole other level of information that's invaluable and changes and offers new action steps. So Jenlin discovered just a wonderful thing when he discovered or articulated felt experiencing, the felt sense, the felt shift, focusing.
Yeah. So you're saying that there is an area, you know, you tend to build a felt sense, an area of body, certainly not your toes or in your fingers or.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I know I, for years, got some support for that idea from chakra theory, and having really experienced chakras, that they were there as energy centers, and that this place where I go when I'm focusing is probably related to energy chakras in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe could move between those, although I usually do experience it more in my chest, heart area.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose there's a chakra behind your eyes, for instance, and at the base of your spine, maybe you could do felt sensing there. But that's not how it works for me, and I don't know exactly why, but it is definitely in the center of my torso.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that area in the center of your torso, heart chakra.
Perhaps the diaphragm maybe is involved. There's a chakra in the diaphragm, I think, too. But anyway, it is there for whatever reason that I feel this kind of coalescing of felt meaning.
Mm-hmm.
I might begin with a headache or a stiff neck or, you know, a tension in my foot. Those could all be starting points that draw me to doing some focusing. I might ask myself, what is this spasm in my foot or whatever. In fact, I do have something like that in one of my feet that it's not trivial. It's about whether I'm grounded or whether my energy is open through the ground or not. So I'm not saying that something that happens in the periphery of your body couldn't be a carrier of felt meaning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying when I ask myself, okay, what's this whole thing going on in my foot? close my eyes and breathe and go into focusing, that it is there in the center of my torso that I look for the coalescing of felt meaning about that thing in my foot.
Right, right.
And that
right,
may not
right.
be the same for everyone, but that's certainly how it
yeah,
is for
yeah.
me.
But so it's a very helpful distinction between sensation in a way that
mm-hmm.
can be a gateway to thing and actual felt meaning that experience with you hands
mm-hmm. the felt sense yeah
felt mm-hmm. sense yes yeah mm-hmm. and so maybe just also talking about that GG isn't necessary that sense is not necessarily dramatic big lightning thunder big but it can be subtle, it can be different ways, it's not
mm-hmm. Yeah, it generally is the more subtle side. I might have thunder and lightning of an emotion, but the actual felt sensing is much more subtle. And then the unfolding and the felt shifting may look like it has thunder and lightning again. It could have a lot of sobbing or energy. But the paying attention to what's the feel of all of it, or the intuitive edge, I might call it sometimes, that is a very subtle process, and it takes a long time of being quiet. It can, anyway. Even a minute, just to time yourself, being quiet inside for a minute is a lot more time than we ever give ourselves in social discourse. So.
Yeah. So. But in a way, the skill to develop there is the quiet and the ability to know the subtle difference. It's
mm-hmm.
not going to hit you over the head with a bite, or you'll activate that ability maybe to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
Subtle nuances.
And then to carefully look for words and images and go back and forth. And then when something hits just right, then there is an aha. It's like there's a little thunder and lightning like, oh, it's that,
mm-hmm.
compared to all the guessing. And I'm now led to say, to mention that I did my dissertation 30 years ago with Jen Lin on focusing in decision-making groups. So I wanted to put in a little pitch for that also, that
mm-hmm.
while we use focusing to work on our thinking and our theory building, or we use it to sort out our emotional responses to situations, focusing can also be when you're in a group decision-making situation, your body is in registering everything that's going on there. And as the felt sense always does, it holds more information than you could ever hold discreetly in your mind. So that if we can make space in our group decision-making process for focusing, people will again be tapping into that whole reservoir of deep information about what's going on that's more than you can put into words at one time. So the crux of that for me is in decision-making meetings.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a structure that takes away the fear of being interrupted. That's the main thing. If people just know they're not going to be interrupted,
yeah.
of course, maybe there needs to be a time limit, a three-minute turn, then they're able to set aside their already known arguments and check with that deeper felt sensing and contribute from there. And as in a personal change process, in a group process, that's often where the greatest new insights can come from. Like, oh, listening to Jane and Joe arguing, what comes to me is this possibility.
Yeah.
And so I can't speak strongly enough about bringing the pregnant pause into our everyday living in many ways.
Yes.
This is part of the Focusing Conversations series of the Focusing Institute, hosted by Serge Prangle. All contents are protected by copyright. You can find other such conversations on our website at focusing.org/conversations.